Hi, everybody, and welcome to another great episode of the IEC podcast. Today, we have an amazing guest, a founder, a thought leader, Eran Bibi. Hi, Eran. Nice to have you here today.
Hey, Oad. Thank you for having me. How are you today?
I'm good. It's still early here in California, but I'm getting there. So, Eran, tell us about your background and the amazing things we're going to talk today. You have some super interesting information to share, but tell us about your background and we'll start there.
Of course. So a little bit about myself. I'm in the industry for almost 20 years. Now, when I say that, I always feel like I'm getting old. But this is the reality. I was starting with the background of system engineering, operating system, very infrastructure-like positions. And when cloud became a thing, I was transitioning more to the software development world with the interaction between infrastructure to software developers. Well, DevOps became a very known method. I was a DevOps engineer, and I really like that specific part of my career, being one of the pioneers of DevOps, learning on the fly what is DevOps and shaping basically the role.
Learning on the firefly, not on the fly. Learning on the firefly.
So, you know, fast forward right now, Firefly, I'm one of the co-founders, so I'm trying to solve one of the pains of managing cloud in scale, which is controlling the infrastructure. So, in a nutshell, Firefly is scanning your cloud and showing you in a very simple way what is your IAC coverage, meaning what percentage of your cloud being done currently with IAC versus stuff that was created manually. We also like to call it ClickOps, the stuff that you created using the cloud console. And we are offering a few automation flow that is helping the user to get full coverage of IAC by generating code. If you are familiar with open source tools like Terraformer, and other equivalent for Azure Cloud, so Firefly is doing, this is the same method of generating code from an existing resources. So I will start with something that I think is obvious, but it's important to emphasize. So 90% of the cloud practitioner is using IAC. And for me, seeing this number, it's giving us a very good confidence that IAC is the facto. This is the way to manage cloud infrastructure. So it's clearly very known practice right now. So I will say, like every cloud engineer, every DevOps engineer, platform engineer, whatever we call that role, the people that are doing cloud infrastructure are using IAC to manage their cloud.
Definitely. 90% is amazing. I remember, I think like 12 years ago, I used to write code in Python. And then the first time, I don't remember actually if it was Chef or Puppet, but I started transitioning into a more scalable way of managing your applications. And fast forward, by the way, it was on VMware infrastructure, a VM with the big Windows and .NET application. So fast forward, we have cloud native and public cloud and microservices and so many different small pieces talking together. And it's interesting to hear that 90% are using
Yeah, I'm not
code
sure if
to
you
represent the cloud
remember
resources.
back in the days when when the cloud was new and we tried to provision stuff through code, not the ClickOps way. We used the Python Butter tree.
Bottle, yeah. I've used Bottle as well, yeah, for AWS.
So I never thought about Butter as an IAC framework, but I think this was like the baseline of IAC being adopted worldwide.
Automate with code your cloud resources instead of clicking buttons. So you say 90% are using IAC, and what about the different frameworks? We are always interested to learn about the cool and the future of the IAC market. So when you asked your audience about the specific technologies, what did you learn about that?
So we ask a few questions about the actual framework being used because everybody that is familiar with IAC know that there is a fragmentation in the market. There is few significant players and frameworks that being utilized. And in most of the organization, you see the fragmentation within a specific organization. So it's very likely to see a cloud that have some portion created manually, ClickOps, some portion are CloudFormation, which is the IAC built in the AWS, and workloads being done with Terraform. And I think this fragmentation is something that is also we can find it in the results of the report. The interesting part this year, if I'm comparing to last year, is that we see that a portion of the user are shifting away from Terraform to either OpenTofu or Crossplane. And I will say that even though I don't see right now Crossplane as a dominant player, we are seeing in this report that there is a lot of interest, or at least people thinking about migrating away from Terraform into Crossplane.
That's really interesting. I think it's a natural response to something that is no longer open source. And it's not like you mentioned that users are thinking of moving from Terraform to CloudFormation or to ARM templates. They're thinking about migrating to two other open source frameworks such as OpenTofu and Crossplane. Disclaimer for those who are still not aware, I'm honored to be one of the core team members behind OpenTofu. So yeah, super interesting to hear about Terraform and some plans of migrating from Terraform to OpenTofu or to Crossplane. I think it's a bit confusing, and let me zoom in on that. If you change Terraform code to Crossplane, it's a big migration. It has its pros and cons, but it basically means that you need to change your code. Moving from Terraform to OpenTofu, just to clarify, at least as of today, and that's the current plan, you don't need to change any of your code. You just need to use a new binary that is open source compatible, and soon it's going to have some advanced additional capabilities that Terraform doesn't have, or at least that's the near future situation. So
Yes,
when we
so
talk about
I guess
migrating, it's
Yeah, it's a good point, Oad. I think because of like when you are transitioning away from something, you always calculate in the effort of doing the actual transition. And of course, moving away from Terraform to OpenTofu as compared to moving from CloudFormation or Terraform into Crossplane, this will require more effort and will be slightly more complex task to achieve. I think one of the stuff that I would like to know, and maybe this is a task for the next state of the IC that we will do next year, is to really understand how this effort being considered. And you know, when you are investing so much time into transitioning to new framework, how people see that and how they are calculating them in their decision to move. But because I think there is a portion of the people that would like to transition away from Terraform from some of the reason, maybe the licensing is one of the reasons, but they are still staying in Terraform because of the effort of transitioning away. A good point will be emphasize that the transition to OpenTofu is supposed to be relatively lightweight transition.
Very seamless. Cool. So you have a lot of interesting data, and I'm wondering how mature the market is. For example, have you seen companies that are now fully representing their cloud resources with code and have zero manual click-ups? And let me share a story here. I think it was like five and a half years ago. For me, it was the aha moment of why infrastructure as code is the future. And I remember I had this Zoom or video meeting with one of the biggest insurance companies in the US. And I was working on a project with them, and there was a problem with the settings in the ELB load balancer in AWS. And I realized some settings need to be changed, and I've asked the engineer from that insurance company to change some settings, basically what happens in the 302 redirect or something like that. And I was expecting that person to open the console and change the settings, but instead I remember watching that person saying, okay, give me a minute, opening GitLab and changing some Terraform code and merging that code. And then I realized he has read-only access to AWS. He cannot do anything. So how common is this situation that companies basically empower their engineers with read-only access and everything is done via code?
So I will put aside what I know, based on my experience here in Firefly, that we are trying basically addressing the challenges of having 100% codified cloud. And if I will take a look on the results of the report, we asked whether people know about their IAC coverage. Most of the people doesn't know what is their actual IAC coverage. Some of them will assume they have very high percentage, but don't have really clue whether it's 100% or near 100%. But one of the items that I got from the report is that only just a little bit more than 10% of the people claim that they have fully codified cloud.
They
claim, because you know, without a dedicated tool that really map and show you that, it's really hard to know when you are looking in your AWS environment. Let's say let's make it simple, like not multi-cloud. Only one account. Let's say we never see such deployment, right? Everything is multi-account, multi-cloud. But let's say only one account, and you would like to know what is your IAC coverage. Mm-hmm. You don't have any way to really understand that, across all of the regions and all of their services, and visibility into that, it's also a challenge. So they claim to have it. So it's only 10%. I will say, based on my experience in Firefly, maybe 10% of that 10% have 100% actually 100% codified cloud.
But at least, you know, they're looking at that as the goal, or as you know, the plan.
Yes, as a KPI.
To go there as a KPI and something exactly. They need to gradually increase. And I want to say something funny about claiming whether or not you understand what's going on in your cloud account. I once accidentally, I needed to test something, and I was working in a project with GCP. So I created a bunch of GKE Kubernetes clusters in some account that I had access to. And honestly, it's a bit embarrassing, but I forgot about those Kubernetes clusters for a long time, for 6 months. And they were running, I think I later calculated that it cost about $6,000 or $5,000, this human error. And I wonder if the head of infrastructure for that company, if you would ask that person, hey, listen, do you have unused cloud resources? Or maybe he would claim that they have 0%, but the reality is that stupid OHAD created some unused Kubernetes clusters, and that cost a lot of money. So yeah, without the proper tooling,
exactly,
it's challenging to really understand what's the situation of your cloud resources.
This is a great point. You know what? When you are telling that, you're saying like the stupid OHAD, but I will tell you, you know, so many people doing those kind of stupid mistakes. So you don't need to be a stupid person in order to forget something or have a cloud race.
Yeah, you have a lot on your mind. You have a lot of tasks. You try to juggle between those different tasks.
And I will say, and try to challenge this, I will say the cloud vendors making it too easy for people to create stuff that costs a lot of money and not knowing about it, and you know, realize that only six months after the fact, by accident, that they just forget. So of course there is, you know, processes and reports and guardrails that you can put, but this is the real effort. So it's very easy to do the mistake, but the real effort you need to put in order to create those tooling in place.
Yeah. So what we hear all the time is about the increased risk that you have when operating the cloud. And with code, it becomes even easier, because if you change some code, it's much more challenging to understand the implications of executing that code in different cloud accounts with different configurations. So how do you minimize the risk? How you increase the confidence of your cloud deployments? How do you have this kind of governance? That's a challenge that we hear all the time, and it became much more difficult with code. I sometimes share about two metaphors about cloud with code. One is funnier and one is more serious. I will start with the more serious and I'll move to the funnier. The more serious, in my opinion, is like nuclear energy. With infrastructure as code, you can easily create a lot of damage. You can create a lot of cloud costs, security, downtime, misconfiguration, and what's not. So basically, when somebody executes the wrong code, you can have Fukushima, you can have Chernobyl. But if you have the right guardrails, you have a very safe and efficient nuclear planet. So that's the most serious kind of analogy of how to smartly use infrastructure as code. The other one is much simpler. If you remember the movie Spider-Man, I think it was Uncle Ben who told Spider-Man the famous quote, "With great power comes great responsibility." So now the DevOps engineers and developers in general have access to the infrastructure in their GitHub repos. So you have a lot of power, so you need to act responsibly and make sure you don't do any mistakes. So again, how you manage those things in scale with confidence, it's a very big challenge. So back to the
back to I the totally report. Agree. Okay, I have a different angle to talk about stuff that are happening in the cloud. It's not a metaphor, but something that to think about. When you are in, you know, a company, maybe a small business or even an enterprise, when you have some cost that you need in order to operate, let's say you are being late in your office and eventually you need to take a cab home, a taxi to go home because it's very late. And then you have the receipt and you need to get reimbursement for that money. And there is a process and your manager need to approve that. And somebody from finance will take a look whether and ask questions. And it, I don't know, it's like $20, $30, so much processes around that. But you only need to run, I don't know, 4M XL VM in Amazon with a click of a button. Just to do a test, maybe you should can run locally in your computer, and it costs like $30. So it's so easy to spend money that no one really knows and can actually challenge the fact whether you can do it with a smaller machine, you can do it locally, you can, I don't know, avoid that, do a, I don't know, that test in a Lambda function. I don't, I'm just, you know, throwing words. But this is what cloud became. Cloud became the place that if you don't have those guardrails, if you don't have the way to control what is being done there, it's just a huge blind spot for from financial perspective, also from risk, you know, security risk, of course. I would like to share or add two more items that I think will be interesting for based from the report. So my you know state of mind when you're talking about IAC is everything that can be described as code should be described as code, right? So we are associating IAC with AWS and Google and Azure and cloud workloads, and it really makes sense to associate that. But with IAC, you can describe other stuff like SaaS applications and Kubernetes manifest, of course, it's an IAC. So we ask the people what is their plan or if they are using IAC for other stuff rather than cloud, like, I don't know, managing your Datadog, managing your New Relic or Okta configuration with IAC. And the result was like 78% of the people either managing SaaS with IAC, a portion of that with IAC, or planning to do so. So the concept of doing stuff with code, we see that people realize it's not just about cloud configuration. It can be extended into other type of management of configurations and resources.
Yeah, I've heard the terms everything as code. Mm-hmm. I've heard the term company as code. So I think, yeah, Okta and Datadog and other SaaS vendors are the yet another great example of how you manage things in scale with a complex configuration, and code seems to be the de facto way to do that.
Yes, and you know, it totally makes sense because when you are listing the advantages of using IAC, like you have version control, you have someone that can peer review what you are doing, you have history of all of the stuff, you have basically backup from any disaster because it's in Git, right? So why not doing that on my Okta configuration, which is very important, very business critical, right? So people realizing that.
And I think I've seen some great examples of how you manage your GitHub.
Right.
Terraform, which sits inside your GitHub. So that's That's super interesting
This is
example.
like Inception, a dream within a dream. Yeah, it's good. GitHub can be, there is a GitHub provider in Terraform, so GitHub is also a good
Exactly.
example.
Exactly.
And the last item, you cannot have any podcast not talking about AI, right? So we ask how generative AI, it's been a year when generative AI, since generative AI was basically introduced to the mainstream. And the result was that most of the people saying that generative AI accelerating IAC
Yes,
adoption
ISA
because,
adoption, clearly.
yes, because now it's easier for you to generate code or
Okay.
generate templates and stuff. So if you were taking stuff from, I don't know, Stack Overflow, Terraform documentation, whatever, now you just need to describe the desired environment, the desired resource, and without any experience or skills, you are getting something that should working, let's say. Again, AI response are not perfect, but it's getting improved over time. The bottom line, people understand that AI is impacting in a positive way on the adoption of IAC.
I want to, like in poker, I want to check raise what you just said. I think obviously it's much easier now to create infrastructures, code from scratch for your modules and templates. What I think is also very helpful, if we think about policy like OPA, so yeah, you generate all of your infrastructures code with generative AI. And then when you have a lot of code and you need to govern that, you need to create those policies. And we didn't mention policy as code in today's episode, but this is a very scalable way on how you govern your infrastructure as code. So to generate that kind of code with generative AI is also something that I feel will become more and more mainstream when you have that in scale. It's challenging to do that manually. So now when you have the expert bot, the expert engine that knows how to do that properly, I think that will also be used in order to accelerate IAC adoption at scale.
Definitely 100% agree on that. So people are natively associate generative AI coding skill with actual programming, but the move for other stuff like IAC and policy that is describing is code generative as AI is become a very good and significant helper and shortcut. And I don't know, I see it very, this is fascinating in my opinion, that period of time of, such a revolutionary technology introduced during, our lifetime. I think this is just the beginning, and I really look forward for all of the evolution of the stuff that we can do with generative AI, even specifically in that domain of cloud management and operating cloud in scale. Very promising, I will say.
Awesome. I think, Ran, we can talk about trends in the IAC for days, but our time is up. I would like to summarize today's episode with like data points and proofs that cloud is becoming code. This is the new era. It's no longer just cloud resources. It's a combination of your cloud resources in your cloud account and your representative code in your GitHub or Bitbucket or something else. So cloud is becoming code, and thank you, Ran, for coming today and sharing with us helpful information to realize what are the trends and how practitioners are embracing cloud with code. Where can I find the amazing state of the IAC report if I want?
So you can find it in Firefly.ai website, but we can also share the link of the report with the listeners of the podcast in the description of this episode.
This is amazing. Thank you so much, Iran. It's been
Thank you, Ad.
fascinating. And let's and let's continue to codify our cloud resources together.
Sure, we will do. Bye bye.
All right, thanks. Bye bye.